live from a rest area in the middle of 35 North, just north of Wichita, Kansas. This is the Bob Davis Podcast. Welcome back, new talkers. This is Podcast 635. I'm sitting here at the rest stop. I actually ordered some chicken fingers. I hate to say, but it's a Hardee's. What are you going to do? When in Rome? And who do I see pull up in a Jeep with a U-Haul behind it and a dog but my son moving from California to New York? Now, we're going to talk about that in Podcast 635. Definitely out here on the road and raving about Mobile Podcast Command, which is the Ford 450 Super Duty ambulance, and it came from xgovernmentcars.com. And, you know, I've talked about xgovernmentcars.com over the years. I've had three Crown Vics and, of course, now Mobile Podcast Command. Owner Ed Johnson gets you all kinds of great deals. They have great financing if you have a job. If you need a loan, you can get approved for a loan. But this is the best thing about xgovernmentcars.com. If you thought you knew xgovernmentcars, think again, because xgovernmentcars now has a broad selection of newer, better, low-mileage vehicles than ever before. That includes the Ford Expeditions and Yukons from Homeland Security and Border Patrol, but they still have the Dodge Chargers, the Crown Vicks, the Chevy V8 Impalas, the Ford SUVs, and the Ford Police Sedan. So if you want a broad selection and newer, better, low-mileage vehicles, 30 lenders to get your car loan approved fast, and again, great deals from owner Ed Johnson. Get your butt down to xgovernmentcars.com, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley, 763-777-8782, and online at xgovernmentcars.com. Well, you know, if my son is here, we're probably going to talk about politics a little bit. And so I have to mention that trade protection is back in the news. And it was certainly back in the news when Trump was in Europe and Germany is buzzing about the things that he said. So companies are really paying close attention to this question of whether or not they should bring some or all of their manufacturing back to the United States. If this is you, if you're in the decision-making chain at one of these companies, consider American manufacturing at Depot Star in Minnesota. DEPOT, Depot Star American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at depotstar.com or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. Well, we kind of arranged it, but...
We did. We may have done a little bit of texting.
We did some texting.
But it was a good lead.
It was a good lead.
And it was spontaneous. It wasn't planned from the beginning. It happened pretty quick.
Yeah. What had happened was, I'm driving along, and I was in northeastern Oklahoma, and you were... And I was like, you know, we're going to be in pretty much the same place. So then I hightailed it up 166... to 35, and then went to another rest area down the road, about 35 miles, 40 miles actually. And then we've been talking, and I realized you would have had to come south and you're on your way north. So I quick hightailed it up here, and we almost got here at exactly the same time. That was pretty amazing.
That was pretty crazy. But yeah, and then we got the dog here too, so you might hear a little bit of
pitter-patter
in the background.
Yeah, he's here drinking his water. We got the doors open. It is, for people in Minneapolis, this will be hard to hear, but it is a beautiful, sunny day. Big, tufted white clouds and 85 degrees and a nice breeze in Kansas, in southern central Kansas on the Chisholm Trail. It's all about... You know, the thing that's interesting about this whole area is, especially Oklahoma, it's all about Longhorns and Indians, and they often appear in the same milieu together. So Indians and Longhorns appear in the same kinds of places, and it's like those two really didn't mix. The cowboys didn't really mix with the Indians, and the Indians didn't really like the Longhorns and the fencing and the free-range cattle, blah, 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 blah. But here they are in the truck stops and the... restaurants, the Jake Rancher restaurant, 4 inches of steak or whatever they say, I don't know.
No, I mean, my best reflection from this whole experience so far is that as soon as we got to Mobile Podcast Command, the dog just
jumped right in
and went to the air conditioning because he was just loves that big air conditioning vent that you got there.
Yeah, I got a bunch of vents and air conditioning up front, but then they have a giant vent back here, but we have it off because you wouldn't be able to hear the highway out there. But this is actually for Memorial Day. I'm surprised. This thing is deserted. I would think that these things would be just packed. The other one was packed. The one I was at 30 miles.
I think it'll be pretty
with.
Packed tonight.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I'm driving tonight, so maybe I.
Maybe sure. Like, you know, like 5, 6, 7, something like that. People are starting to go home from barbecues, etc.
From Uncle Al's house and every place else. So you came from LA. You're moving to New York. I don't even want to know. So what experiences have you had driving?
Well, I just think it's really cool to see how big the country is. And you've talked about this in some of your podcasts, but it's really cool to see the country kind of transform from like the desert of LA. And then you get, you know, just a little bit more like trees and shrubs and stuff like that. And then suddenly you're like in New Mexico and you're seeing like big trees, which you don't ever see really in LA. Unless
where do you see that in New Mexico?
Like Albuquerque area.
Oh, okay. All right.
Where's so, the other?
Because I didn't see too many trees. I saw white sands and I saw UFOs and missile ranges.
Well, I was in northern New Mexico.
Okay.
And then I was in Texas for like a few hours, which I didn't really know. And I saw
you went through the panhandle of Texas.
And I saw Amarillo. A cattle ranch that was like as far as the eye could see. Cattle, yeah. Like in
and
fenced
what,
area.
Tell me about
eating
the flies.
Out of troughs.
Tell me about the flies, Lily. Go ahead. Tell me about
a lot of flies. Excuse me.
A lot of flies.
Did I say flaws?
Yeah. Floss. But you meant flies.
Well, you know, flaws. Floss, flaws, flies.
Yeah.
And lots of them all.
It's very interesting because in southern Minnesota, we have pretty industrial agriculture. There's, and I've been talking about it on the podcast, you know, they now have the all-night diesel filling stations for trucks because the trucks move around in the middle of the night. To deal with, just they don't want to deal with the traffic. So, you know, you'll see the trucks out at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning on those back roads. You know, it's pretty industrial, the agriculture in southern Minnesota. And I've never seen agriculture like that down in the panhandle that I've never seen that many cattle. Because I was there in September when they were harvesting the cattle. And there
oh,
were
wow.
millions of them.
Really?
Yeah. They take them there to be harvested, basically, and rendered, or whatever you call it. But they all go there in the trucks. And
is the word slaughtered? Is that
slaughtered.
What
that's
for?
The word. These words are so overused.
Or is that one of the ones that we don't really use anymore? We use like a, you know, like
is that
processed. Do we just say processed now?
I guess. Well, the thing is that words like slaughter and horrible and incredible and amazing are so overused. If you say that, people think you're an idiot. So if I were to say slaughtered, which is technically what it is, but there's millions of them. I mean, you can't believe how many cattle get moved through there.
No, I mean, I can. I saw it. Like I said, far as I could see, cattle ranch. It was crazy. I've seen, obviously, a ton of farms in Minnesota with, you know.
Were these ranches or
30,
were these where
cattle.
They take, were this in that area north of Amarillo where they take them to be
I don't
slaughtered.
Know. I just drove through and there were a lot of flies on my windshield and a lot of cattle around and I just kept moving.
The flies are super fat because they've yeah. been just feeding off of
those
cattle.
Because I got to move quick, so.
So you didn't stop to try to figure it out?
No, I wanted to, though, because I had my camera and stuff. I wanted to, like, take some pictures, maybe see if I could interview someone, but I had to just keep moving, so I couldn't do that. But, no, I mean, another thing I've been doing as I've been driving is I've been listening to this podcast about Chinese history.
Mm.
And it's been really interesting because you see how long that history is and how, you know, 200 years, there's stability, it's great, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, it's chaos and, you know, people can't eat, and it's like... You know, you see how you know small of a time period we're
living
in right now. Even if you go back to the founding of the United States,
oh, yeah.
And we're just under one political system right now.
Well, even if you go back to the colonies, really, I mean, I'm not saying that the British Crown and the United States government are the same political system, but they are cousins. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a, you know, it's a little bit of a shakeup, a little bit of a transition. You could put a dividing line between pre-Civil War, post-Civil War as kind of a, you know, a pretty substantial shift in the way the U.S. government is put together.
That's when the tyranny began.
Yikes. Okay, so anyways, but no, I think what's interesting about it is, you know, you see how people work so hard to just get a little bit of stability or, you know, stop the river from flooding. And then, you know, all that's just thrown away a few generations later. And then maybe it comes back. And so it's just, it made me think about our politics right now is, you know, we have a lot of people who just kind of want to like burn it all down and shake it all up. And on both sides of the aisle, it's not just Trump people. It's also some people who are far left
sure.
as well. And I was just thinking about, you know, I think sometimes we forget to remember how precious the progress we made is.
Well, you want stability because you want to be able to maintain the good things that you have been able to make, the progress that you've been able to make. How far does China go back? Just so people get an idea what we're talking about.
I don't know exactly. I think I told you like 3,500 BCE.
Or is it 350 BC?
No, 3,500, I think. It might be 3,000.
Which would make it...
It's super old.
The second oldest.
It might be 2,500, but you just look it up. It's on, you know, it's online.
The second oldest civilization, like after Egypt, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So it predates Rome.
So you listen to this, you listen or read about this history, and you see it.
I thought it was 350.
It's all happening in parallel. No, it's at least over 1,000 years before Christ, I guess is what we're using as our.
Okay. So it predates Rome, and that's an important distinction to make.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. The Chinese are fantastic.
Well, and it's not a whole commentary on Chinese politics or anything. I think what, for me, it's just, it's there are obviously a lot of problems with the way that things are operating right now. But, you know, regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on, right? But I think what's important to remember is it takes a lot of work to get what we have now even up and running, and just to burn it down or, you know, throw it into some sort of crazy state of chaos, I think can be really dangerous. And so it just makes you think about that when you see how high the stakes can be. And, you know, you see these examples in any history of any country or any civilization, but it's just, I just happen to have seen it in the Chinese experience.
Why did you pick the history of China podcast?
Well, I already listened to the history of Rome.
Right.
And then,
is this the same guy?
No, it's a different guy entirely. And I didn't know if I was going to like this one, but I have so far. And I need something to kind of keep my mind off driving, so that's why I listened to it. I just plugged it in and started listening to it. It's pretty good, but no, I mean, it's just we're living in, again, in a very, very small time period. And when we think about even year to year, 4 years here, 4 years there, I mean,
and we think it's the earth shattering changes, but it's just 3-4 years at a time, and we don't have any perspective of a civilization. And obviously, they had different leaders, but 3,500, well, no, it's more than that. It's 5,200, 5,500 years. And that doesn't include India. I mean, India is another one that goes way back, right?
Yeah, and I think for me, like, you see again how tough it is for them to do something as simple as unifying a bunch of different kingdoms to get stability and what essentially I think we'd look back on and say is economic growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's basically their version of a trade agreement would be,
what I'm trying to say is... for me, what I was thinking about, and this isn't the only way to apply it, but I think we're at a period, and I know we've had a lot of conversations about this, but I think we're at a period where there are a lot of people who want to make international relationships more deep and try to build, you know, make it easier for people to trade across state lines and to live, you know, move across state lines or et cetera. And when I say state, I mean country, not, you know, Nebraska versus Oklahoma, et cetera. But, and I think...
Well, we're lucky to be able to do that.
What I'm trying to say is that we're in a situation where we're seeing a lot of people saying we should pull back, we should stop free trade, we should, you know, disintegrate the UN and the European Union, and, you know, I think before burning it all down, we should really think about what the consequences are going to be of that. You know, do we really want to live in a world that has less integration?
Yeah, nobody's thinking about that. They just want their job that was shipped over to China in a box. They want that put back in that box, the same box, which the Chinese, I'm sure, kept with the same labels from 1983. They want their job put back in that box and shipped back over here. That's the idea. So nobody wants to think about what's going to happen when we get rid of the UN. I'm not a fan of the UN, and I don't, you know, when you're out traveling and you're out for any length of time, and for me, this is I've been out here for over a week now, and so this is the beginning of my trip still. So, you know, you start to mellow out, you know, and it's so funny because this is what we do, you and I. I mean, we have these intense conversations about politics and stuff, and I haven't thought about any of this stuff really since I left. I've been thinking about storm chasing.
Well, that's actually another reason why I started listening to the China History podcast, or why people might want to listen to your podcast, is because it's a relief from the just relentless beating of like Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, which I have on my car in Sirius XM. And so I have this thing where I get in the car and I just start listening to it. And within minutes, I'm agitated and I'm like, you know, it's just, you can't help it. And there, you know, it's good for breaking news. Like when
something happens.
Right. No, like when Trump fired Comey, it was like perfect. I was stuck in traffic. I was listening to it the entire day.
Everybody was telling everyone why it happened and without knowing anything, what's
going to
happen.
That was actually helpful to get that information that way. But right now, nothing's really happening that's like super game changing. I don't think, fingers crossed. Hopefully nothing will have happened by the end of this podcast.
You know, I don't want to say that I don't care. I just think, I think that your point about looking at things on too tight of a timeline, you know, is really true. We expect these things that have great import will be long forgotten in 50 years. you said a long time ago, you know, you could take the whole period of history, the most significant thing that's happened in the last 100 years is World War II. And we're talking about these little things as though they mean something.
Right, and I should probably hedge against that. I'm sure lots of people would argue with me about that. That was just one conversation.
No, but I think it is the most significant thing that's happened.
I do think it's the most significant thing that's happened, at least.
Sure, because look what came of it. Atomic weapons. You know, modern mechanized warfare, modern naval air and power projection, the current geography of the world, with some exceptions.
Yeah, I was going to say for sure. I think.
And all the same problems, the problems that we weren't able to manage going forward. So the World War II and the short aftermath, so maybe you could include the Cold War, probably the most significant things that have happened in the last 100 years.
I think you could argue that World War II essentially set the stage for the Cold War, which eventually resolved. But I think, you know, again,
well, we resolved it.
State lines are essentially the same as they were at the end of World War II, obviously with many exceptions, but essentially the same. The world system that we put together, essentially the same. I mean, that was where our current way of life really, really butted out of that time period, I think. So I'm sure you could really argue with me about that if you wanted to, but
I'm going to stop you right there real quick, because I have to say that this is a beautiful day. You know, just it's been beautiful all day. Blue skies and sunshine, big, as I said, white clouds. It's beautiful here in Wichita, Kansas. I know it's been rainy and cold in Minnesota, but the heat is coming to Minnesota. And when it does, you're going to want your AC to work. So don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul to do an AC check to make sure everything's working right. It's got to be above 70 to do it and do it properly. But also, leaky pipes, leaky toilets, things like that that really can add up the water bill. So all kinds of maintenance issues when it comes to keeping all of your systems running right, especially these days at home or business, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating, because you want reliable service and you want it to be from hometown. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, from St. Paul to all the suburbs across the river and, you know, whatever it is, through the Dale and all the rest of it. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Once again, the number in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide for generations, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Well, you'll probably hear at least one motorcycle roll by on this freeway in this beautiful, beautiful sunny day. It's perfect for riding. And I want to remind everybody that I'm working with this company called Ciro3D. They make great motorcycle products and accessories, especially lighting options and solutions. But they make all kinds of badass accessories for your bike. Check them out online at Ciro3D, C-I-R-O-3D.com. Quality parts and lighting options, so that you can be safe and cool at the same time. Ciro3D.com. Got a brand new catalog coming out, and I'm telling you, I've seen it, and it is fabulous. Ciro3D.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. I don't want to argue. I'm not interested in having... I just don't have the energy to argue right now. I'm out here looking for different things, to tell you the truth, right now. I'm not interested in... Because honestly, I think it's going to be a while before some of this stuff resolves, and people are just talking about. And you know me, I do look at what's going on every day. I did it again today, where I just scan everything that's written, and I'm not talking about drudge. I'm talking about scanning, you know, all of the opinion pieces that are written, and it's all, you know, it's somebody who works for some agency who has been told to write this article defending the president, or it's someone who's on that side defending the president. Fine, if you like the president, that's great. But then on the other hand, then you have all these people writing in all these different publications, which no one knows who supports them, saying he's terrible and he's the worst president ever. And it's just, nah, 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 nah. And it's we're not getting anywhere with it. So I don't want to do a podcast about politics either. I wasn't even interested in talking about politics.
No,
we
don't have to
down.
Even go there. I mean, I agree that, you know, there are brief periods of time where suddenly you want to know everything, which is like when Trump fired Comey, when there was a breaking news story about him telling the Russians classified information. Then you want to talk about it. But, you know, when the special counsel was appointed, that's a big story. But I think since the special counsel was appointed, there hasn't been a ton of like really game-changing stuff happening besides the kind of drip-drab of very notable reporting done by the New York Times and Washington Post.
Oh. You are hilarious. It's very notable if it's the New York Times.
No, it's notable because they've been breaking these huge stories. It's not that it's who they are. It's that they've been...
You do realize that there's a whole... you know, army of pundits that will tell you that they haven't been breaking stories. It's all been informed, you know, by anonymous sources and people that want to be on deep background, and a lot of it isn't sourced, which that isn't true either. I'm just saying, when you say something like that, you almost can't even say that. That's another word like slaughter or, you know, horrible. You have to be careful when you say something like this incredible reporting being done by the Washington Post and the New York Times, because, you know, maybe...
I said notable, and what I meant by notable is you should know about it. It's important.
Okay. All right. Then I will permit it. I will. But this is not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about your experience driving across the country and what you've been thinking as you drive and see the empty planes.
My main thing was I really feel like there's people who want to burn it all down, and I said it before, and I don't want to see it all get burned down and thrown into chaos for no reason. If you have an aspirational idea and you want to do something and you really want to make that policy happen and get there, like, let's do that. Let's go for it if it's a good idea. But
there you go right there, if it's a good idea. But see, that's where everyone disagrees. Nobody agrees on what the good ideas are.
I think you're misunderstanding me. I think that there's this kind of, like, weird pleasure we take in, like, criticizing people just for the entertainment of criticizing them. And
that's all it is right now.
And so I think, like, there's a ton of problems with what we have, obviously. There always are. But there was a ton of problems with what people have had every time they've built something in any civilization or society. There's always problems with these policies, with, like, aid programs, with whatever, with the treaty. There's always a problem.
Well, I mean, think about the country that we live in.
You got to just move forward. Every year, you got to work a little bit more, fix a few more problems, and keep going, or else you end up, I think, in the worst-case scenario, collapsing, and then you have a really bad situation that's undeniably worse than it was before.
Yeah, that's fine, but here's the problem with all that, and now you're engaging me on this. The problem is we have an overbearing government that is doing too many things that somebody is going to have to pull the switch on at some point, because it's extremely expensive, and with all the good stuff also comes the surveillance and the jackbooted thugs and the bad things. And this is where you get people on both sides of the spectrum who are freaking out because they feel like the government isn't doing what they want it to do, or they want it to do more. So that's the chief problem.
I think
in order to get rid of that, now you talk for a while, now I'm going to talk. In order to get rid of that, people are basically put in the position of demanding that it be burned down or shut down. And now, in Minnesota, for example, because Dayton is at a crossroads or an impasse with the Republican House on funding, everybody wants a minimum income, they want a $15 minimum wage in the state of Minnesota. The Republicans won't put it in the bill, so Dayton's going to shut down the government. So remember when Republicans used to go, shut it down! Now the Democrats are screaming, shut it down! And it's like, yes, please. Now we all agree, let's shut the damn thing down and get rid of all these state agencies and everything else, with the exception of things like rest stops and highways.
And all the things we like.
And Hardee's at the rest stop. And McDonald's at the rest stop.
And
Starbucks.
Subsidies for farmers. Oh, and also
No, I'm against that.
No, I mean, I think the follow-up is, what do you want? I think the follow-up is, what's your plan? What do you really want? Because I think that's where people start to get a little more hazy. Yeah, it's terrible. Let's burn it down. But maybe if we burn it down, it won't be as good as it was before. And then
I don't want to burn it down. I just think we have to start curtailing the size and scope of the federal government, particularly, and the state governments. And it shouldn't be an argument. It's costing us a fortune, okay? And if we have to get rid of the rest stops, then so be it, you know? I don't think we'll have to, but that's my position. And here we are. We've been talking about politics for 20 minutes. Didn't you get anything else out of the trip driving along? Did you see any history or anything that interested you besides what's going on in Washington?
I didn't get a chance to stop at the Hoover Dam like I did last time, which was really cool. Last time I drove across the country, I did that. I wanted to stop at the meteor impact site on 40, Highway 40, but I couldn't do that.
Ooh, I would love to do that.
So I had a lot of stuff I really wanted to do, but unfortunately, I mostly just listened to the History of China podcast, or it's called the China History Podcast.
What did you see out the window while you were driving?
Well, mostly just a lot of trees and stuff.
You didn't see anything interesting when you're driving through
Albuquerque? No, I mean, I did.
I like
driving through the little towns.
Any
I think
towns
it's really interesting. I mean, I don't know. I've driven through a lot of little towns. It's just interesting to see stuff. It's just different than what you see in LA and what I'll see in Minneapolis when I get to Minneapolis and what I'll see in New York when I get to New York. So I like that.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a terrible and uninteresting statement, but.
And you're pulling a giant U-Haul, which with a small six-cylinder Jeep, which is, so you've got the four-axle U-Haul trailer and it's full of what?
Four? Is there four on there?
Well, it's four wheels. So it's four axles, yeah.
Okay.
What's in it?
Lots of stuff for lots of people.
Lots of stuff.
I got stuff for family members. I got loaded up with all this stuff. So I was going to Minneapolis. I'm going to New York. Got, I mean, about a, I'd say about maybe a fourth of it is my stuff.
You and could actually have the tiny one axle, two wheel U-Haul trailer, but you have this giant thing. It's not as bad as I thought it was.
Is larger than my car.
When I
the
saw
the trailer
it,
is larger than the car. Let's just be clear on that. And it is maybe a little heavy front loaded, just a little bit, so it's kind of pushing the car down a little bit. But
the weight of it is what pushes the car down.
I understand that.
And what's interesting,
I've been pulling it across the country. I get how it works.
Okay, I saw a guy at the other rest stop who was pulling the same trailer, except he had a Suburban. You've got that tiny
Jeep.
It
takes a good minute or 2 minutes to even get up to 50 miles an hour. I'm just kidding.
Well, that's about like this thing. It's a slow acceleration.
The dog needs a little water.
How's Murph? Is he enjoying the trip?
He likes the trip. I think he might get a little motion sick after like 24 hours in the car. But
and Murph is bigger than me, pretty much.
We got a lot of mass in that Jeep.
And he has to hang out in the back with the seats down. And that's he doesn't really have anywhere to go. Do you? You don't have anywhere to go, Murph.
No, I mean,
so, you know,
thing,
that's it. You just want to talk about politics? Jesus. Ugh.
You're the one who brought it up. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you brought it up. I'm sick and tired of the whole thing. I'm just sick of it. You know what I'm sick of? I'm sick of people who have to write, this is what you should think, and this is what's going to happen if things continue the way they are.
Well, I can say something in relation to that, because I think it's much more interesting to just get in your car and drive and see the country. And just see what's going on and see if you think... I mean, the way that these towns are characterized on the news, for example, is just... I don't know if it totally...
Are you talking about what you said earlier about New Orleans being, woohoo, party time?
No. I like that. What I'm trying to say is...
You mean small towns.
What I'm saying is, like, I think that there, especially with, like, a New York-based news media, there's, like, this notion that these small towns are decrepit, sad, broken places.
Some of them are.
And some of them do look that way, but others look, you know...
I went through
like
towns.
Happy, exciting, thriving little towns.
And it's,
you know?
What I want to know is what makes them, what's the difference? Like, what is the difference that makes them different in terms of, I went through towns in when I was coming out here on my short trip from northeastern Oklahoma last night to the Wichita area. I went through some small towns that are not good at all. Like all the storefronts been empty for 30 years, that kind of a thing. And then you go through small towns that, you know, they have the chain restaurants and they have the Applebee's and the Walmart and the like I went to Stover, Missouri for the storm chasing guy. You know, kind of that kind of a not really decrepit, but kind of starting to not doing that well. Then you go over to Versalles. That's where the or it's spelled Versailles, but it's pronounced Versalles. And it is where the Walmart is. But they have the Walmart, and they have... So they're a little bit more... There's a lot more going on over there than there. And they have a new school and all that.
Yeah.
Some towns are doing better than others out here.
Right, I'm just saying it's cool to get the whole, you know... I guess what you could say is the whole picture, although you know, I didn't get out and talk to many people. But, you know, it's a bigger picture than what you see when people at a think tank just say, like, well, the disaffected white voter in Wisconsin, you know, that's like... a lot of people that they're talking about, and sometimes it's an accurate statement, other times it seems a little
far-fetched.
Far-fetched, that's what I'm
well that's because they don't go to these towns, and the thing is in these places are people, and if you start talking to them you'll find out that they're just like you and I. Most of them, they're just, you know, they just live in a small town, they've lived in a small town their whole life, but they're not stupid and they're not mean and they're not you know, terrible people. They're just everyday people. And I think when you work at a major, you know, urban newspaper and you're dealing with the urbane in urban areas, you forget that there's real people out here, and they are suffering. Some places are suffering in rural America.
Well, I think what I do want to say is, like, I don't know if it's at the fault of the people who are working in New York, but I think it's just, I think that these ways that we hear about rural America are stereotypical and they're pretty powerful, like ways that we hear about, like, you know, urban America or like under-resourced
areas. Well, I mean, what it takes to survive on 6th Avenue is different from what it takes to survive on Main Street.
Like, you know, the South Side of Chicago has a certain, you know, has a certain...
You know, I can tell you, nobody's going there.
Characterization.
Not even Rahm Emanuel is going to the South Side.
Apparently has a lot of problems on the South Side.
Oh, he won't go there. He's afraid to go there. I'm not kidding.
I don't know if that's...
Well, you told me that.
I didn't tell
He'll
you
go
that.
To the police station down on Michigan Avenue.
Absolutely did not say that. By, I don't know what kind of weird
by
reconstruction
Chinatown.
That is.
He'll go to that police station by Chinatown, the new one, the police
is
headquarters.
Is it really nice?
It's really nice.
Anyway, so...
But that's as far south as he goes, unless he's going to a White Sox game.
What I'm trying to say is I just think, like, I think it's an extra trip for someone to leave New York and to drive all the way to Wisconsin and to...
Go to Luck, Wisconsin.
And to really connect
or Milltown.
And to really connect with somebody there. And what I learned a little bit doing this work that I did on the Hollywood sign is like it's rare that someone really, for lack of a better term, like I don't want to say I embedded, but to say like someone really goes back to the
no,
same
you
place.
Embedded. That's exactly what
well,
you
I wasn't
did.
Living there under the Hollywood sign, but I was there all the time, at least once a week, talking to people, or I called people a lot too. A lot of times when I went there, I was getting B-roll for videos. But when I was writing, I mean, I was writing at least once a month, and I was talking to people at least once a week about this Hollywood sign issue. And I think there's a big difference between calling someone and getting a few quotes and writing a story and really seeing something play out and getting to know people and building a relationship over a long period of time.
People should know you have the Millennial Channel, right?
I mean, we've talked about that on here.
Is it called Millennial Channel?
The Millennial Project.
The Millennial Project. That's right. And then we've talked about it on podcasts, but you've been working on writing for the Los Feliz Ledger on the Hollywood sign issue. And now you're working on a sort of a wrap-up video. And you're still the only guy that's talked to all the principals.
I don't know if I'm
story.
The only... I'm close.
And I do have to do some quick background. Hollywood sign background is that there's... I think you said at one point that there's as many visitors to the Hollywood sign per year as there are to Disneyland, right?
Well, it's... So there's a lot of confusion
surrounding
this.
So that's hyperbole.
Well, it's very difficult. The long and short of it is there's a group of residents who live below the Hollywood sign who... I'm getting a call, sorry. The long and short of this
it's
is...
Mom.
Where are you? Are you okay? Are you dead by the side of the road? The long and short of this is that there's a group of residents who live below the Hollywood sign who don't want to have tourists or hikers coming through their neighborhood to go visit the Hollywood sign, which is located on Mount Lee.
Boom.
In a giant urban park in Los Angeles called Griffith Park.
But there are all these stakeholders. So there's businesses, there's parking districts.
Yeah.
Let me just explain it quickly. Parking districts, businesses, residents that are pro-access, residents that are anti-access. And they have had little blurbs here and there over the years on local TV. But you're the only person who has talked to them all
on
and
camera.
Put them on one place on the Millennial Channel, or the Millennial Project, rather.
So I think I'm the only person that's done it in-depth on camera, so you can go and get these, like, 20-minute videos hearing from
They're
these
great.
People. And the thing is, it's really
and
cool.
And you want to go do that with other kinds of stories.
Yeah, this was, like, a tester issue. And to make, you know, it's a Hollywood sign. It's really important locally, but, you know, the stakes are not super high, you know? So I want to take this format, and in some way, shape, or form, with you know, I'm going to continue tweaking it, but apply it to some other issues. So, no comment.
I told you.
I said
fake news.
What do you say? No. Next question. No.
Well, all right. Thanks for doing this. I know you got to get back in the car and go. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis podcast, sponsored by Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And X-Government Cars on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, right off the page, through streaming at TheBobDavisPodcast.com. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, especially Instagram, and on The Bob Davis Podcast's YouTube channel, which is just type in the search window in YouTube, The Bob Davis Podcast, and you will find the YouTube channel. I'm doing videos of the trip, so you can kind of see what's going on this trip and other trips. No politics on the YouTube channel. And of course, thanks for your donations for diesel fuel at thebobdavispodcast.com. Look for the banner at the top that shows Mobile Podcast Command in New Mexico, or for the big yellow oval that says donate. Click on that and you can donate $1, $5, whatever you want. It really helps. Time to get back on the road. Thanks for listening to podcast 635. All right,
I'm getting
calls.
All sorts of texts and calls, and I got to get back on the road.
Get this dog and get him back on the road. And it was fun. It was really cool to just kind of, you know, rendezvous. I was the advance team. We rendezvoused here at the Tawanda Service Plaza in Kansas. And now you're going to go north, and I'm going south. Boop, boop.
That's pretty amazing. The good thing about Murphy is he doesn't bear all this stuff. He kind of just...
He's a lumberer.
And he's just like, okay, I'm here now. I'll be over there in a little while. See, I can't tell what he's...
Do you want to go over
does.
There?
I think he does.
Let him through on your side.
Yeah, look at that. Look at how fast he moves that way.
Go.
Don't be scared. It's okay.